Hi, I'm Jesse. Let's have a devotional. We're in Acts chapter 12, beginning in verse 11. When Peter came to himself, he said, "Now I know for certain that the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's grasp and from all that the Jewish people expected." As soon as he realized this, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John Mark, where many had assembled and were praying. He knocked at the door at the outer gate, and a servant named Rhoda came to answer. She recognized Peter's voice, and because of her joy, she did not open the gate, but ran in and announced that Peter was standing at the outer gate. "You're out of your mind," they told her, but she kept insisting that it was true, and they said, "It's his angel." Peter, however, kept on knocking, and when they opened the door and saw him, they were amazed. Motioning to them with his hand to be silent, he described to them how the Lord had brought him out of prison. "Tell these things to James and the brothers," he said. And he left and went to another place. This all follows Peter's miraculous deliverance from prison. God has the sovereign right to miraculously intervene when his people are put in prison, when his people are suffering. He has the power to do this. He doesn't always do this, and he won't do this throughout the book of Acts. He will allow Paul to be shipwrecked. He will allow Paul to be bitten by a viper. He will allow Paul to be stoned nearly to death, and then Paul will go back into that same city again. He allowed Peter to be arrested, but now, as is his sovereign right, he intervenes. So in the classic discussion about the sovereignty of God and human free will, these are not as incongruous with one another as you might think. God knows every potential outcome of human free will and has the sovereignty, like moments like these, to just step down, reach his hand in and say, "Nope, I'm going to change the course of history." That's his call. He has the authority to do that. And he does it without violating his own standards. He does it without compromising his own gospel. He is engineering everything in such a way that heaven will be perfect, and there will never again be an angelic rebellion. In heaven, we have our tears wiped from our eyes, but we don't have our memories wiped of the earth. The same is true with angels who are loyal to God. 2/3 of the angels remain faithful to God, 1/3 become demons. Living in heaven and a future perfected thereafter will never again worry for a future rebellion. And God is the architect for the story of redemption that he's writing right now. He's the architect, and he has the sovereign right as the author to just take Peter out of jail. And that's what he's just done here. So he intervenes. It dawns on Peter in the beginning, in verse 11. He thought that it was a dream. He comes to himself, meaning he wakes up and he says, "Now I know for certain that the Lord has sent an angel to rescue me from Herod's grasp and from all the Jewish people, from all that the Jewish people expected." Why is that significant? Because in the previous chapters, Peter was speaking before the circumcision party, those who believed you had to be circumcised in order to be saved, and he sets the record straight. And at first they believe him, but then they'll turn on him. Coming up in chapter 15, you're gonna see it's gonna get even worse. I love Rhoda. There's another Mary introduced here. This is Mary, the mother of John Mark. And then Rhoda is her servant. She comes to answer the door. She knows that it's Peter. She recognizes his voice. And she's so excited that she forgets to actually open the gate. When she goes back to tell the crowd, "Peter's here," they reason it's his angel. Okay, now in some parts, In some regards, this could be a original kind of pre-teaching to what we call guardian angel teachings. This is this, along with a teaching from Matthew 18, is coupled with the belief that each individual has an angel who watches over him or her. That's not strictly biblical teaching. Moreover, when they come to this conclusion, it's his angel, they could refer to the fact that it's Peter's angel, or it's a spiritual version of Peter. We don't become angels when we die. Okay, angels are angels, humans are humans, but they were wrong. In either regard, whether they intended this to say it's a hologram of Peter, his angel, or it's Peter's guardian angel, who for some reason sounds exactly like Peter. Like, either way, it doesn't matter. They were wrong. It was Peter. It was actually Peter. So meanwhile, Peter just keeps knocking. He just keeps on knocking. God has miraculously intervened, He described to this to the team of people how God had brought him out of prison. He said, tell these things to James and the brothers. Okay, so pass word on to James and everybody else what's happened here. God has miraculously intervened. What does this indicate about where they're at? God is on their side. They are on God's side. They are doing the will of God. This is how the church was born, my friend. Consider all the historical implications if God had not miraculously intervened and delivered Peter from prison. We'll talk about that in more of our devotions coming up this week. This is the Holy Spirit of God launching the church into the New Testament era. It's the same Holy Spirit whom you experience when you worship God, when you feel conviction for sin, and it's the same church that led to the Redemption Church. So, today, let's continue living out this book of Acts together. Go.